Welcome to Lost Art of the Skilled Trades podcast. Today, we have John King, owner of JK Welding and Trail Gate on the show today. John, it's great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. It's a pleasure to be here and excited to be here. Let's see what we can get into.
I'm actively working with the American Welding Society. They have a site called Welding Workforce Data, and it shows what's going on in the welding industry. And I just want to share with you a couple of statistics, and I actively watch this. So we need 360,000 welders needed by 2027. There's 90,000 average welding jobs to be filled each year. There's more than 155,000 welders that are approaching retirement age, somewhere in that 5 to 10 year mark. Is welding a dying career?
If you're asking me, I'm glad to ask the fact that I really think it is. It's a dying breed. It's a dying career. The older guys who didn't have smartphones that did it the hard way, the old-fashioned way, are the ones that are going to be retiring soon or already have. I believe that maybe most of those statistics are correct, although there's a few things that kind of make me think differently sometimes based upon the fact of how many applicants I get at either business of mine as far as welders go. But I think that it is a dying breed and a dying career, yes.
So what do we need to do in that case? People talk about AI and automation, that automation and AI is going to fix this shortage that we have. How far can that take us and shortening that gap in the welding shortage?
I don't think it's going to take us as far as people think it is. Welding is an art. No matter what you're doing, you can only do AI so far. I'm not really a believer in much of the AI. I know that it's a needed process or it's some desired equipment and that can be a useful tool in some aspects. But for instance, in my shop, I'm a custom fabrication shop. I'm a custom job shop. You can forget AI. All that stuff comes from right here. I don't think it's going to take it as far as people think it's going to.
Yeah, and I don't think that's going to, robot is not going to just all of a sudden this or some sort of plumbing job, or you can just replace that with anything, any type of trade, right? It's just not going to happen. They always say, they've said that robots are coming for blue collar jobs, but guess what? AI is coming for your white collar job.
I'm a firm believer with what you just said. It's coming for the white-collar job, but I think maybe a lot of white-collar guys maybe watch too many episodes of the Jetsons and think that the robots are taking over soon. But no, it's not coming for the welding trade, I can tell you that, yeah.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I don't think that's anytime soon, but I do know there's this dire gap that we need to close. And that's why I work with the American Welding Society to put out those messages to get people into those roles. What are you seeing in your own business? And we'll get into your business in a few minutes. But what are you seeing about attracting and retaining people in your industry today?
Well, it's definitely changed a lot since I started, which was 18 years ago in my garage, to now employing anywhere between 50 and 100 welders. But I have seen a drastic change, but not only a drastic change, but I think people have a tendency to focus on the wrong idea of becoming a welder. And I apologize to you now, Andrew, if I get carried away a little bit, but here, I must explain to you, because I think about this daily, all the time. I'm like any other entrepreneur or business owner. I want to be successful with good people, because people is power. You make power with people. You make great products and a great process and good profits with good people. That's the four P's. If you have the four P's, you're going to be successful. But without the people, you're nothing. So I always believe in good tradesmanship and good skills are very important. Guys, first, a couple of things that have to really happen is you must play well with others, must be respectful, you must show up on time. Let's get the basics out of the way first. Then we can start working on trying to find some skill-keyed employees that can get that down first. But I notice a big trend change in people that applying for welding jobs. I don't see very many new upcomers or guys that have gone to welding school coming out, anyone talking about I wanted to be fabricators or fitters. Everyone talks about welding, and I think they got the wrong aspect about welding. A lot of people think that because you spend 6 hours a day in a booth welding for 2 months or 3 months, you're a welder now, but which is great. And most of them do come out as welders, and some of them are great and some of them are okay. And some of them find jobs and some don't. However, people have a tendency to forget before something can be welded, someone else designed it. Someone else put it on paper. Someone else was able to read the drawings, identify the material, cut the material, cut the angle of the material, and be able to fit it together and tack it before a welder even came in place to weld anything. I really think there could be an enhancement to the welding impact of welders being retired, and there's a shortage. I think that the shortage could be helped some if we were to hopefully see an impact on schools and welding schools and high schools starting to force more math onto individuals, not only force more math, but different types of math, but also let's forget about welding. Let's forget about welding and let's focus on teaching kids and young people how to be fabricators and fitters and read blueprints, because that's where we're lacking. If you can do that, they'll learn to weld along the way of learning the job to be a fitter and a fabricator. But I have experience with so many employees that do not understand math at all, can't read measuring tapes, can't do decimals or fractions. That is my biggest challenge with employees, especially today.
You definitely said a lot there. And on the people side, obviously, if you have the right people, right, and you have the right people in the seats, you have the right people fitting the culture, sky's the limit. You need the right people in place to scale the business. It's interesting what you said about the math skills. What's happening in schools, right? So are individuals, and this is only my perspective, I don't see shop classes in high school. I don't see, what happened to that? What happened to the shop class? I didn't take a shop class. I maybe took a woodworking class at some point, but I didn't really take a shop class. But if I was exposed in a younger age, I might have taken a different perspective. And it never was forced upon me or shown and said, hey, you can consider this path in the trades versus a college path. I don't see that. What are you seeing, shop classes, or is it?
Yeah. So I've been really involved with Texas High School Welding Series, and they've gotten up to where now, after 10 years of being involved, I started out with 6 or 8 welding competitions a year. Now it's 60. It's just gone crazy. But amongst these Texas High School Welding Series, it's where high schools and their students come to a particular location and they perform welding and they compete against other high schools. And they get their practice from shop class, from different high schools. So in Texas here, we have a lot of shops. I'm sorry, a lot of schools that have a lot of really nice shops. I've been to a lot of them and they're nice. But it's back to that same thing. It's seeing how pretty my weld is. Let's see how many pretty welds I can make. Let's see how long I can weld. Let's see how long my welds can be. It's nothing to do with math. I'll give you a really prime example here. I took 5 guys from my shop, Andrew, 5. And they all came from 5 different welding schools. I'm not going to name any welding schools, okay? But they all came from 5 different welding schools. And I pulled them in the conference room. This is a true story. This happened about 6 months ago. And every one of them could not read a measuring tape. And their parents paid for their welding school anywhere between $12,000 and $24,000 to go to a welding school. And in some of those curricula activities that they had, I read or learned that they only had a 4 or 6 hour class on reading measuring tapes and understanding math and fractions. That's why it's so important in the welding industry. But not only that, just as a man and as a husband or just a guy, period. Later in life, when you ain't even welding, so say your wife wants you to build a dog house. She's going to look at you funny if she gets out there, starts building, and you're not able to do it. So let's not change our, turn in our man card. Let's learn some math and some basic skills, because like I told you, I had 5 guys, none of them could read a measuring tape. So I actually drew up a dollar bill on the erase board. And they're like, what is that? I'm like, okay, I'm going to start right here. How many quarters are in a dollar? And they said 4. I said, how many quarters are in the gas tank? They said 4. I said, okay. How many quarters are in an hour? like every 15 minutes. They said four. I said, you notice a trend here? How many quarters are in an inch? They said four. Let's break that down. So I taught these guys math, and I wish I had $5 for every time I taught an employee how to read the tape, because I'd have a lot of money right now. But you know what? I've actually gotten a lot of hugs and a lot of handshakes and a lot of thank yous for teaching me, because I wouldn't be where I'm at in life with employees that can actually come back and thank me, or I hear about it. It's a great feeling.
Yeah, it is these basic skills like reading a tape measure, right? That's universal. Whatever you're doing in your house, you're just measuring something. Yeah. If you don't know how to, and a lot of, like you said, a lot of people don't. There is this piece or certain things that we know as kids, maybe us, but something got lost along the way, that a lot of this stuff and the technology that's being built around everything else, that it's so easy to look up something versus to do it yourself. There's something that happened over a handful of generations, and I think it's based on the technology.
You say five people.
And one time didn't know how to read a tape measure. Yeah. That's just basic stuff.
And it doesn't even have anything to do with it. I had a guy put an air conditioner in my office here, put in a new thermostat. Took him 45 minutes. You know why? Because he had to YouTube it to figure it out. Lack of training, man. Lack of training, lack of knowledge, that's just where we're at now. So it's hard to find some really good skilled guys, especially for my business. I'm a custom job shop. So we're not necessarily have a production line, or we don't necessarily not building the same thing over and over. We're building art. Welding is an art. So
how important is training in a company when a new individual comes in and they're interested, whether it's the welding trade or it's a plumbing trade? How important is the training aspect to set these new people up for success?
So based upon my business and my world of where I come from, because my company is so versatile and so many different types of welding trades, aluminum, stainless, pipe, structural, whatever, plate processing, I can't foresee anyone getting any more or any better training than you do here actually at my company. And this is my own opinion. We do so much versatile stuff. You get more experience and more exposure, and you'll learn more just from OJT, on-the-job training right here at JK Weldon. Some other people may have some other specialized training that they do or something like that, but every day you come here at JK, it's something different every day. And that's the way it should be. That's school. That's how you learn something different every day. That's what we do here. But training is important, but you can never learn enough, Andrew. You know that. You can never learn enough.
Yeah, and you need to be a sponge, right? You need to soak up all that knowledge. And hoping that somebody who's a veteran, the younger individual, because that person who is a veteran was a newbie at some point, right? And hopefully somebody helped them. And hopefully they can pay it forward. They can give back. Because if they retire, all that knowledge and wisdom that they've learned over the years,
It's gone.
So companies should have obviously a good training platform in place and a succession plan to give it to the new generation, because they want to succeed.
No, nothing brights my day more than guys we help, the higher end, that are like helpers. And here it is 6 months later. I got one in the shop right now, hired him as a helper. Didn't know jack squatty about welding. And he was just sweeping the floor or picking up metal, or maybe he's starting to learn how to grind metal. Now, full-fledged welder. I got a raise in pay, doing a great job. He learned a trade, man. He learned it within 6 months here at JK. Now he's a great welder because he went around at lunchtime and applied himself and learned from the veterans like you talked about. The older guys have been here a long time. He was smart. He listened. And I get that question probably more than anything, Andrew, from people that are in the trades or are going to school or plan on going to school. What can I do for my son to teach him to do better in school? Or what can I do myself? I'm paying for my own school. Or what can I do to become, you know, to find a job? I'm just starting to learn. And I tell them all, look, if you don't know math, you need to get your butt back in school, whether it's just some night classes or some college courses. But you need to get a job at a weld shop, a reputable weld shop. You need to become friends. You need to maybe kiss the ass of those veterans that you become friends with, because those are the guys that you're going to learn from. Knowing that, you're going to learn math at night and blueprint reading at a college. And within a year or two, you have increased your asset value so much, but when it comes time to laying people off, they're not going to lay your ass off because you've learned. You showed effort. You showed up on time. You've learned from the veterans. They're going to want to keep you. That's the way I see things as my employees. So that's the way I see it.
What's the possibilities in a wage? Because the average, and I'm just reading off statistics here, that the average welding wage is about $24.80 an hour. That's off of weldingworkforce.com that the American Welding Society puts. Is that accurate for where that is?
I think it's all based upon the type of, back to the type of welding. There's so many different levels of welding, Andrew. If you're a process welder in a production line, I think that's probably a fair statement. If you're like welding for astronauts or space, I think that's too low of a pay. I think if you work at someone like at my shop, I definitely know by my guys' wages that it's not enough by some of their skill traits and their skill levels. It's not near enough. I have employees that make a lot more than that. I have employees that make a little less than that. But I think that the pay scale of welders has come up. At least I think it's come up in the aspects of, I think some business owners don't honor it or don't do it. And I think that some people just stay stuck at a job because it's a job and they take home a check. So they don't venture out to try and get any more money. But the industry and the life that we live and the inflation that we're experiencing, especially the last couple of years, has definitely escalated the pay of welders. And I actually think that amount of money that you're indicating should be higher. I think
it's, look, it's not easy work. And I was watching on, I guess it was Instagram, and I forget the woman's name. It was, she was welding in a shipyard. She was going on these big, massive cruise ships, going down the hull and just welding. And she was so excited about it. And I'm completely blanking on her name, but just watching her and watching her journey and her success. And I follow, I don't know if you know Barbie the welder. Sculptor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mind-boggling what she can do from an artistic standpoint.
Yeah.
And,
do you ever follow Sarah Stork?
I know her.
So I think she's an extremely talented girl. She has charisma about her, and she does great work, and she's such a sweet, respectful person, and she's got a lot of talent, and she's classy. So I think, hats off to her, to Sarah, and I think she does a great job.
Yeah, and there's a lot of inspiration. Even as a kid, I used to watch, and I don't know if you would know this, but American Chopper.
Oh, yeah. I know very well.
The brother and the son and the father.
I watched every episode.
And it was pure entertainment for me because it was a father-son relationship. But just watching them in awe, just the way he would fabricate and just see it, to me, was just like, I wish I can do that.
Yeah.
I wish I can do that. And yeah, you get
a nice feeling. I've been like that my whole life as well. Just like you're talking about. And I have a lot of guys here that work for me that are in that way some and in that way a lot of ways. But I've been like that my whole life. I can just look at a picture or a drawing. Royal Caribbean sent me in a cartoon rendering of a 100-foot pirate ship. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but they sent me a cartoon rendering of a 100-foot pirate ship that goes to a kid's water park, and they wanted it built, designed, and shipped to Miami, and then put on a private island down in the Cayman Islands. But they didn't have any drawings. They didn't have any sketches or blueprints. And anyone that I probably would have ever known would have looked at that and just laughed and walked away and said, man, there ain't no damn way. There's no way I can do that. But we did it here at J.K. Weldon. We designed a 100-foot pirate ship and built it from a damn cartoon drawing. And it's those things that you got to be able to have visibility. You got to see the vision of the true art of what's going to come out at the end. It's one of those things that you just stab at it as you go along, and man, you just know the feeling if it's right or wrong.
That's years of experience, right?
Yeah.
For you to turn that into an actual product. When you first started out, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong with your story and your journey, it was a sort of a side hustle for you in the beginning. Tell me about your journey, because in this podcast, obviously, we like to know about people's journeys and being entrepreneurial and what it takes to be entrepreneurial. Yes, the trade side, of course, but what does it also take to be that person who can actually run a business and keep it going for years and years? What's it been like for you?
It's been a journey. It hasn't always been good. I will tell you, it's not for everybody. It is not whatsoever. I'll throw out a couple street names of some type of things that I think that it takes to become a good business owner and entrepreneur. But before I get into that, there's one comment that I want to say is there's not one person in this world who goes from working a day-to-day job that just jumps into owning their own business the very next day. It takes time. It's like fine wine, man. You got to give it a little time. As time goes by, it starts growing and starts curing and things come along. But most people start out, and at least I hope they do, like I did, a side hustle. I was tired of my job, the where I worked, but I had a wife at home and a kid, and I had a real bad habit of hunting and fishing I had to pay for. So I had to keep working. And in order to keep working, I had to create a side hustle, and that was doing that stuff out of my garage, building deer feeders and building cowboy furniture and horse pens and all that kind of stuff. But the street names that I like to throw out at people is how to get started and how to maintain that ability to stay an entrepreneur and stay a good business owner. First of all, you have some street smarts. And I say these kind of things, Andrew, because I didn't go to college. I wasn't a qualified college candidate. I didn't like college. I didn't think I would like college. If I went to college, it was for a weekend to chase girls. I never went there for nothing else, man. I never attended college. Barely had graduated high school. So I can tell you that it takes a lot of street smarts, but it takes a lot of respect, of being on time, and you got to be creative. And the biggest word I probably use more than anything is you got to be a hustler. But you got to be a hustler in a good way. You got to be sneaky. You got to be slick. There's times where I wanted to get work from a company and I couldn't get my foot in the door. And I knew that if the girl up front, sitting up front when you walked in was heavy set, I'd bring her some donuts. And I knew I'd get my way in. If she was skinny, I'd bring her flowers and chocolates. And you got to be slick, man. You do. And that's just the kind of stuff that I would do to get my foot in the door to talk and present myself, my company, and my processes and my skill sets to the right individual. Not the girl up front. She don't sign the check. She don't issue the purchase orders. You got to get to the man, the main man. But you got to find a way to get around it. And you got to be a hustler, but in a good way. Those are the important things. And nowadays, social media is so big now. It's so big. I think a lot of young people have the wrong concept of the fact that they're going to be successful because they post pictures taking selfies of themselves, of their welding or their... That's not what's going to get you there. It's a great picture. It's fun to do, but there's other ways of showing and displaying your work than selfies or just taking pictures of your welds. So show pictures of being creative. Show pictures of your creativeness in your work. Show your work to the world, and it will speak for itself.
Where did it come from that for you, that entrepreneur spirit? Because not everybody can do what you just said.
Yeah.
You hustle. Where does it come from? Do you think it was just you were born like that, wired up like that, or did you grow up in your family that it was somebody, maybe your father, or like, where did it come from? Or are you just naturally like that?
I think I'm naturally like that, but it didn't come from my father. I come from a broken home, Andrew. My parents divorced when I was 12. My parents disowned me. My grandparents raised me in a very racial type environment, a very alcohol abusing type environment. My parents still disown me today, and they were still both alive. Not something I'm proud of, but that's their decision, not mine. But I like to tell people that because I'm a strong person, and it's made me stronger. It made me the person who I am today because of those type of things. It made me be a better entrepreneur, better businessman, better husband, better father. But to answer your question, I think that a lot of this comes from two things. I think I was partially came in the world like this way, but I also have a tendency to think that when you get hungry, you'll find a way. And that statement, when you go hungry, can mean a lot of various things. But if you want something bad enough, you'll find a way. You will find a way, especially because of the fact of your outcome and your income of money have a lot to do with your family. And when it comes to family, we'll all do anything we can for family. And if that means on being a hustler and doing a good job and making money, doing the welding thing, being a structural fitter or being an artist, you'll find creative ways to do things. But it takes a lot of time under the hood, a lot of time under that torch to be creative. But once you find out the fact that you are creative, you've got to be a hustler and show the rest of the world who you are and who you've become. Because if you don't, you'll never get discovered. That's why you and I do a lot of videos, preaching to people, preaching the gospel, if you want to say, throwing it down, because a lot of people just don't know.
Yeah. And look, with your situation, you thrived, right? You were able to find your way. And there are a lot of people come out of that situation who just, they don't, they go the other direction. So I applaud you for keep hustling, keep pushing, keep learning, and look how far you've come, right? Over the last handful of years. So I applaud you for that. Not everybody can do that. Yeah. And I do believe that a lot of it also comes from within. Even siblings, I have a brother. He's very different. It's just, we come from the same household, same upbringing, but we're just two different people. It's just, a lot of that's just being wired up in a way.
Yeah.
So it's not bad. It's just different.
Yeah, same here. I have a brother too. We're similar in a lot of ways, but not so similar in others. So he's not a person to take a leap of faith and go out on his own. He likes working that 40-hour job and being off on weekends, and doesn't like taking their risky moments. Where I do. Hell, the reason I was late getting on the podcast with you, because I'm down the street looking at opening a second location for JK Welding. That's why we were late. We were looking at the shop, the second shop to open, and I realized I was going to be late coming to your podcast.
No worries. Yeah, look, my journey too, and I had a life-changing event. I don't know if you know sort of my back history, but I wasn't a tool guy. I was an IT guy. And on September 11, 2001, when I was living in New York City at 23, the planes had just hit the buildings. And a couple of days after, I found myself on ground zero with a friend helping tradespeople and emergency workers, first responders, find survivors. And for me, watching the tradespeople on site and what they did, I had a life-changing event where I quit my job in IT and then formed an online tool and equipment business named Toolfetch with my brother. You talk about just divine intervention, just took me from one path and put me in the other and just put me on this path. And it's interesting you were saying about in the beginning stages, when I started my business, my first year, we made no money. And you talk about just being like, I could have easily given up and said, I'm just going to get a job. Because a lot of people within the first 4 or 5 years, I don't know what the percentage is, a high percentage of companies fail. And there's something within me, there's a burning desire and a fire that has not burnt out. I've been doing it for 23 years and we've scaled and built the business. I think it comes down to, again, the entrepreneurial spirit. I think it comes down to who you are as an individual. And you just keep, for me, I just keep moving forward. I just keep pushing, right? I try to look at the upside instead of the downside. And a lot of people can't do that. So the entrepreneurial spirit entrepreneurship is not for everybody.
Well, you have to keep looking up to the positive side, to the upside, because when the downside comes, it usually comes hard and it will take you down, but you can't let it keep you down. And this is in any trade, whether you're an owner or just a, you're a welder or you run any kind of little company, you know, you're going to have downfalls in life, no matter what. It's all about the matter of how the fact that you accept it and what you turn it into, and dusting yourself off and looking to the positive and moving on. That's where you got to be. Sometimes you just got to say the hell with it. Y'all get out the way. Let me have this thing.
And being an owner of a company, who have you had people throughout your career, a coach, a mentor, someone who can at least work with to steer you in different directions? Have you had that going through your career?
I've had that a lot myself, but I also have some top lead guys that work for me that take some younger guys under their wing and kind of show them the ways. And that's not like an every hour, every day situation. It's just, I guess it was no different than being in welding school. They're going to show you one or two tricks early in the morning as soon as you get there. And then those are the things that you're going to focus on and that you're going to do for that day. But we have a lot of guys here that come that train our younger guys that we hire. And again, we don't hire the younger guys unless what I just told you earlier, you got to play well with the others. You got to show up on time. You got to be respectful. We're old school here at JK. Fortunately for us, unfortunately for others, if you're late twice in a week or a third time, there's a gate. You got to go.
Three strikes.
You're not even, sometimes not even that. You got a bad attitude and it's two strikes. You're gone. She gone. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, toxicity in the workplace, the work environment is no bueno.
I've had it before, Andrew. And there's been one time that sticks in my mind more than any, where I had my best guy, my best hand. In fact, twice. My best hand told me, you got to go. And he was so surprised. And I was so hurt by it because the guy was so talented. So much talent. One of the most talented fabricators I've ever seen in my life. And I had to let him go because he's so toxic, so bad. You're just talking trash, man. And I've been drinking so much the night before and late all the time. And there were several times where I couldn't really run him off because I was stuck with the guy. I had no choice. I had to get a job done. By the time I got ready to fire him and run him off, another big important job would come. I still have to put up with his ass. But finally, one day, I went out in the shop and he's like, I think they're calling you in the office. Don't you need to be on the phone or answer an email? And I'm like, last time I looked, my name was on the front door. I can do what I want. I don't need you telling me what to do. And that's the day he got let go. So
sometimes the area top performers are the worst for your culture. And I've seen that time and time again in different organizations. So
you never know.
Yeah, it is. John, tell me, how do people find you out there? I know you're extremely active on LinkedIn. And if anybody wants to check out John's designs, it's pretty crazy with the gates and the things that you do out there. It's superior work. Yeah. How do people find you out there?
I'm on TikTok. I'm on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn. John King. You can just type in John King or JK Welding, Trails West. Also, one of my Instagram and TikTok is The King of Welding. You can find any of those apps that have that type of titles. You can type that in. You can find me and my companies on there and see all the crazy stuff that we do. And see all the employee support and all the creative things and wild jobs and projects that we like doing. We got a new project coming up, Andrew. I can't announce it right now, but you and the people listening to this need to pay close attention. We're about to break the Guinness Book of World Record. And I'm not going to tell you what it is, but we're about to build and fabricate and design something that's about to break the world record. So it's going to come out in the next month, about 4 to 6 weeks, probably.
Very cool. Keep us.
Matt. I will.
Yeah, John, it was a pleasure to have you here. I know you are a welding enthusiast. I know that you want to see the industry not die. I think that's extreme. That's extreme, but we desperately need people getting into the welding trade, and hopefully that will start to, over time, things will start to improve. But it's been great having you on the show, and thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.